One of our options for today involves the opportunity for us to look ahead toward the church's celebration of the Reformation. So we're going to do that today. It happens to be a John text, that Reformation text, so those who know me best know exactly why I've gone for this option rather than another one. The text is from John 8 and starts at verse 31. We'll be looking at verses 31 through 36. The selection of this particular gospel lesson for any celebration of the Reformation is an appropriate one. Appropriate because the three solas of the Reformation are in evidence in this text. Sola fide, sola gratia, sola scriptura. It's especially sola scriptura that's in evidence here. Not just in this text, but throughout this particular gospel, one of the prevailing interests of the gospel is this one, the one that has to do with the sufficiency of Jesus' word, not just the sufficiency of Jesus' word, but the ultimate necessity of reckoning with Jesus, especially in terms of his word. If one is ever to adequately reckon with the challenge of Jesus' person or his purpose, in the end, you got to take Jesus at his word, or you simply will not comprehend who Jesus is or what Jesus has done. So it's a nice text for us to be looking at for the sake of observing or remembering the Reformation. Especially in this text also, we'll have the image of a house to reckon with, a faithful house, a faithless house. To be house, you need to, again, be connected to the Son, especially the Son's word. To abide in his word is to belong to a faithful house. To fail to do this is to be reckoned a faithless house, and faithless houses simply don't continue to be house of God. So, hopefully these kinds of matters prove useful to anyone teaching or preaching from this text in observation of the celebration of the Reformation. Verse 31. Elegen un ha Jesus pros tus pepis tu kotas auto. Jesus engaged in the activity. Elegen looks to be an inceptive use of the imperfect of lego. So that's imperfect indicative active third person singular with Jesus as the subject. Jesus engaged or started into the activity of speaking there then, or therefore, un, to those who were believing in him, pros tus pepis tu kotes auto. You have a nice use of the substantival participle of pistuo there. The object of pros then is that substantival pepis tu kotes auto. Indicates the object of that believing, this verb taking that object in the dative. Well, I should say, actually, though, because we haven't noticed this yet, that the object proper is eudaios there. He engaged in the activity of speaking to the Jews who were believing in him. This is the, you know, the great chapter 8 of the narrative of the gospel, where things get decidedly conflicted and hostile. But when we get to the end of this chapter, they will pick up stones to stone him. He is, it seems, in the temple as he addresses a mass of persons. There are Jews present. Actually, it kind of, from beginning to end, proves to be a bit of a challenge to identify who it is exactly that Jesus is talking to throughout this chapter. It seems that believing persons are represented in the crowd. The opposition is represented in the crowd. You know, so when he's talking to use guys, it's not always clear exactly who he's meaning to target or whether he's meaning to target anyone at all. Here, at least, he's going after those who are exhibiting trust or faith in him. He says to them, "Ean hemes meinate, if you abide." So "ean" takes the subjunctive. We're actually looking at an aorist form of the subjunctive of meno here, aorist subjunctive active, meinate, if you abide in my word. En to lago to emo, nice use of the possessive adjective there, to emo, you are truly my disciples, alethos mathetai mu este. So if you abide in the word of Jesus, you are one of his disciples. If you don't, you're not. It's the bottom line. He has already said to them, or at least to some of them, some fairly provocative things. He'll in this chapter, he of course will name some of them the seed of Satan. What's the problem here as they fail to embrace Jesus? Jesus goes straight to the bottom line. You are not able to hear me because you cannot bear my word. So to others, to those who are believing, he says, if you abide in that word, you are truly my disciples. Verse 32. Kai gnosis the tein aletheon, and you will know the truth. There's a nice future of gnosko, gnosis the. And the truth, kai he aletheia, will free you. Eleutherose, the future of Eleuthero, and the truth will free you. Verse 33. This text is familiar. Here comes the familiar response. They answered him, apokritheson, the aorist indicative passive deponent of apokrinomai. They answered him, pros auton. We are the seed of Abraham, sperma Abraham esmen, and have never served as slaves. There's the nice perfect of duluo. Here, dadulukamen. We have served as slaves, pulpete, at no time, backing up, udene. Nobody, no one, right? At no time have we ever served as slaves, anyone. So they're kind of objecting to the characterization, of course, Jesus' characterization of them as persons needing to be freed from anything. If you're the seed of Abraham, that's all that matters. You know? Now, in the face of things, in the face of their current experience, in the face of the reality of an oppressive overlord, Rome, and all the rest, even in the face of the their ruling king, who isn't even a Jew, the Herodian family is no Jewish family. So, you've got an overlord, you've got a king, you've got all kinds of realities that sort of speak to the contrary, it's a bit comical then for these people to be suggesting that they've never served anyone as slaves ever before. They are an enslaved people. But Jesus is not meaning to speak to kind of the externalities of their lives. He's going to go right after his heavenly intention in speaking with reference to a need for them to be freed. He's not meaning to get after, at least with his statements now, any suggestion that it's time for them to be freed from Rome, freed from the family of the Herods, or any such thing. The problem here is not that sort of a problem. So in response to their objection, and to what they say there at the end of verse 34, he himself will have an answer to offer. They ask the question, how, pos, are you saying, su leges, the hati of indirect discourse follows, how are you saying that, hati, you will become free? Where do you get off saying to us, you will become free? Right? Eleutheroi is a predicate adjective, a form of eleutheros. Ginamai takes a predicate nominative or a predicate adjective in the same way that emeh does. Sometimes that's missed. It's important for us to notice that the ginamai often functions as the equivalent of emeh, the verb to be. And it looks to be doing that here. How are you saying that you will become or be free? Verse 34. Jesus answered them, apakrithe, another aorist passive deponent and therefore active form of apokrinomai. Jesus answered them, autois. Truly, truly, okay, whenever he says truly, truly, we're supposed to be noticing as readers that it's a penetrating moment. I mean, he's meaning to get after his heavenly intention that they have missed. As earthly, kind of citizens of this world, in characteristic fashion, so much like the rest of the earthly citizens in the course of this narrative, they've interpreted the diction of Jesus, the heavenly one, with heavenly intention in earthly terms. You will become free. So what do they think he's talking about? They think he's talking about their immediate external circumstance. They seem a little oblivious to some basic realities defining that, essential external circumstance. That's not his heavenly intention. He's meaning to address instead the problem of sin. Nice Reformation thing for us to be talking about. He's going to get after that now. Jesus answered to them, truly, truly, amen, amen, I am saying to you, or I say to you, lego humen, hati. Looks to be a hati of direct discourse here, since the subject of the main clause is I, but that doesn't carry into the dependent clause. So that suggests to us that this is a hati of direct discourse. So we, in translation, we should offer a comma and quotation marks. I am saying to you, comma, quotation marks. Pas ha poion. There's another substantival use of a participle. Ha poion, the one who does, and then the direct object is tain ha martion, the one who does sin. Its present stem, poion, you should probably be quick to ask questions, or we should quickly raise considerations having to do with the issue of connection, the suggestion of a connection here. Its present stem, the one who does sin, is this just the one who happens to trip up one day and makes a mistake, or is this the person who lives for the sake of sin? It strikes me that we should be considering very seriously the available suggestion here that the reference is to one who is to one whose life is characterized by sin. It's a little word study work with this sort of language elsewhere in the works of John will help us with this. We're not just talking about people who occasionally make mistakes with this. We're talking about the person whose life is defined by sin. he's getting after the basic dilemma of life when it is infected and defined by sin. The one who lives for everyone, every person then, pass, who lives for the sake of sin, ha poion tein hamartian, doulos estin, is, a slave, or even the slave, since the predicate nominative here precedes the copula, doulos estin. I suggest that because I'm again thinking that the language here is as strong as it possibly can be. He's meaning to get after the dilemma of the human person, the dilemma of the human condition, and any way that we can reflect the strength of his intention is good. Slave of sin is he. Tes hamartias is the genitive that modifies the predicate nominative there, doulos. Verse 35. So again, he's attempting to, you know, address the problem of their incomprehension. They failed to, you know, devise his intention at all. He's wanting to address, you know, the dilemma of sin, and they're thinking otherwise. If sin defines you, then you're lost. You're a slave of sin. There is, however, a way to be freed from this, and that's what Jesus is meaning to alert them to. He is the way, the truth, the life. He is our opportunity for freedom from sin, if we just take him at his word. If you're defined by sin, you're a slave of sin. The servant or the slave, verse 35, ha doulos, does not abide oumene. Now, we should probably be thinking of that first use of mene that came earlier in verse 31. If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples. The slave does not abide in the house. Here. They have raised the issue of house. He's more than happy to talk about house. We are the seed of Satan, or we are the seed of Abraham. Elsewhere he will, you know, refer to at least some of them as the seed of Satan. You know, who's your daddy? Your daddy defines you. So if they're thinking that Abraham is their father and that they belong accordingly to a house of some significance, then Jesus is happy to get after the issue of fatherhood and household and whose son you really are, you know, whose seed you really are. This is entirely in keeping with his interest and purpose here. Being born from above means you have a father. Being children means that you belong to a house. Belonging to a house is everything. They think so. He does too, but he's the only one here who seems to be comprehending how it is that one ever belongs to a house of importance. The slave does not abide in the house, eston iona. We could translate, with reference to eternality, but let's not forget eston iona, that the phrase here while often appearing for the sake of a description of a thing lasting forever, never does that without being fully cognizant of the age which is to come. So it's eschatological speak, not just, you know, stuff lasting forever speak. Eston iona. So I find myself actually preferring to translate these sorts of expressions in terms of that as eschatological intention, in terms of this very conscious reference to, you know, the age which is to come, which will never end. The son, so the slave doesn't abide in the house, the son abides in the age which is to come. Ta huios mene eston iona. Who's he talking about? What's he? The son abides at the end of verse 35. Then there's a second reference to a son in verse 36. Let's go there. If therefore, or if then, the son frees you, see that? Another use of the verb for freeing, eleutherao. Here again, it's an aorist subjunctive. Eon takes the subjunctive. If the son frees you, truly, ontos, or indeed, ontos, eleutheroi, free, esestet, you will be. So what's he saying? You know, the slave doesn't abide, the son abides. If the son frees you, then you're really going to be free. In other words, you're really going to belong to the house. Which son is he talking about, from son to son, you know, and then to the issue of freedom? You know, we might be imagining, with the first reference to a son, that he's meaning to speak to their opportunity to be sons, not to his present person as son. I mean, that's inviting, it's suggestive, but it might not actually be the intention here. Again, a little word study work with the rest of this gospel, with the remainder of this narrative, is helpful, because that word study work will alert us to the fact that huios, everywhere else in the course of this narrative, ever and always refers to Jesus and only to the Son of God. Huios is Jesus. There are plenty of other nouns of choice for John to be using, and he uses them for the sake of describing children, progeny, you know, those born from above, those who have become, you know, persons belonging to the household with a father, with a householder. But huios, this narrative, reserves for Jesus. If son here at the end of verse 35 refers to someone other than Jesus, it's the only place in the gospel where this happens. What am I suggesting? I'm suggesting that it probably doesn't mean that here. It probably means Jesus, which, you know, perhaps the how this affects our reading of the text is not an incredibly large thing, but there is a bit of a difference here, right? The slave then does not abide in the house in the age which is to come. The Son of God does. So from a reference to a slave, you know, who's defined by sin and therefore can't belong to the household, right? Then there's a reference to a heavenly son, Jesus. He's the one who abides forever in the house and defines the house. We might go back to the prologue. He came to the things of his own household, and the persons of his own household received him not. So household is very important in this gospel. Household is very important to the Reformation. What it means to be a faithful house belonging to God, our Father, is everything to the Reformation. The previous contact of that other house, which became a faithless house, necessitating the work, the endeavors of Luther and the rest of the reformers. I mean,